Welcome to the Timitude Podcast, where we have stimulating and all-inspired conversations with thinkers, dreamers, makers, movers, and trailblazers. In part two of my conversation with Bonini Kusano, we do a deep dive on breathing. And Bonini takes me through a breathing exercise, which is absolutely lovely and you can join in. Secondly, we get to talk about other things that she's passionate about, like food, and how that much that really means to her, as well as just quirky and funny things, as you'll get to hear in this beautiful, beautiful conversation. If you didn't get to listen to part one, make sure you start there and absolutely enjoy this episode, which is just there to inspire you today.
Because there are certain things that you do to your physiology as you're breathing, which takes your breath to a higher level of consciousness.
I like that. Yeah.
So your physiology plays a critical role, not only because your spine is straight and you're comfortable, but there are certain things that when your body is positioned in a certain way, the breath elicits something else versus when it's a certain way. So let's do that quickly so that you can understand as I'm talking.
Yeah.
So I want you to sit cross-legged.
Okay.
If you can.
Yes, I am. I am now in that position.
Right. And as you're sitting cross-legged, I'm going to start positioning your body in a certain way. And I'm not going to say anything about you breathing and not breathing. You are going to notice what the body does, right? Mm-hmm. I want you to put the palm of your hands facing down on top of your thighs, spreading the fingers apart. And then I want you to swallow and immediately notice what the body does, the breath does. Did you inhale?
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, it just like...
So literally there are certain physiological things that when you do, the body goes into a particular rhythm. Now you are going to turn your hands the other way around with the palm of your hands facing up. Notice what happened to the shoulders when you did that. And now notice what's happening to your breath. What did you do?
Okay, on the shoulder, like a flick. And then there's just this, the way you're breathing is like, there's a flow.
Right. But you exhaled first this time. Didn't you?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so we're going to now move even further with your hands exactly where they are, your feet exactly where they are. Right, I want you to relax your tongue on the floor of your mouth. And then I want you to swallow. You went in for an inhale, right?
Yeah, immediately.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
So these are the little things that you can start doing when you feel your body going into distress. You feel a conversation going the other way around. Position your body in such a way that your posture gives you an advantage.
Wow. So a question.
And you don't have, by the way, before you go into the question, you don't have to sit cross-legged. You can untangle the legs now and go into the same position and notice what's happening to the shoulders immediately. The minute you put your hands on top of your thighs with the palm of your hands facing up and you swallow and you relax your tongue on the floor of your mouth. And then exhale. Did you exhale, Tim? Don't die.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did.
Okay, you have a question.
So like this breathing, because I'm thinking, you know, we need to make sound decisions. Like, for example, you're going for a meeting, or maybe you need to go and see your doctor, and maybe you're expecting some, you know, difficult news or whatever the story is. And is this something that you can infuse into your routine to say, not when I just wake up at 6 in the morning, but maybe before my next very important meeting, it allows me to, I can actually do this? Is this something that can be incorporated?
100%, Tim. So let's sit typically like we would be sitting in a meeting, right? Mm-hmm. So your feet down on the floor, feet parallel to each other, toes pointing forward. And now with the hands still where they are, with the palm of your hands facing up towards the sky, spreading the fingers apart, open the elbows to point outwards, right? They must stretch outwards, and you should see them, the tips of your elbows on the peripherals of your eyes. Right? Inhale. Just any way you always inhale, and exhale. Close your eyes. Inhale. Open your eyes. And exhale.
Yes, it just seems to open. It just kind of lead to an exhale when you open the eyes already.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, let me take you through the breathing so that then you understand. Let's say you're receiving news from your doctor, right?
Yeah.
Receiving news, and whether it's test results or whatever, position yourself in a way that your body is not going to go into a depressed mode, right? Mm-hmm. So your physiology elicits certain chemistry in your body. When you're sitting upright, right, with your spine erect, your body automatically goes into the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest, not the sympathetic nervous system, which is the fight or flight.
So by
positioning the body the way I have just done, where everything is in alignment, you're now working with the geometry of this architectural structure called self, right? You're opening your arm. Even if the palm of your hands, by the way, are closed, maybe it's a soft fist or they're the other way around, it's okay. But at least now look how open your shoulders are. You're looking straight at this person, as opposed to your body being skewed more to the left or to the right, or your shoulders are droopy and your chin is down and you're just listening, or your elbow is on the desk with your hand on your chin, you know? But you are now going to be receiving the news. You're going to be able to swallow. Firstly, you're going to be able to notice that your body needs to breathe. Your body is going to force you to breathe.
Yeah.
Your body is going to tell you to breathe. You're not going to be quiet because it's gone into parasympathetic mode, which is the rest and digest, which is the calm part of you. In that way, you're not going to be processing information from a limbic limbic section of your brain, which is the one that is often referred to as the reptilia brain, right?
This is where you are very
emotive, you're very emotional, you're very subjective.
Wow.
And then whereas when you go into the prefrontal cortex, which is just there on your forehead, you're going to your executive center, which is your thinking, you're more objective. So you can literally hear, even push your spine against the chair and relax your hands and be able to talk and express yourself and ask questions and be like, so basically what you are saying is this and this and this and that.
Wow.
Notice people who've got game, people who consider themselves knowing. Look at the way they sit. Look at the way they stand. They won't sit with floppy shoulders.
Executive presence, as they say.
Yes. You literally need to open your upper part of your body, your heart space. You need to open it up. You need to slide those shoulder blades down. You need to allow the structure of the body to hold you, not the breath to hold you. There are big structures in that body for a reason. There is bone structure for a reason. There is muscular structure for a reason. Not for you to be holding that whole big structure with your collarbone. Look how tiny that is.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are, tight.
Yeah, so it's almost like a given. With a tight chest, you'll make bad decisions. But if you really open up and you're sitting that way, you allow all your faculties and the best of you to kind of show up.
Absolutely. I don't know about bad decisions, right? Or but you are receptive.
Yes.
You are receptive. And I love the fact that you're opening up all your faculties 100%. Mm-hmm. Because you're working with the geometry of the body, alignment is everything. Alignment is everything. Feel that when you're sitting, your inner ankles are shooting through the inner lining of your legs and cutting through your groin, cutting through the navel, going all the way up, cutting through your chest and your collarbone, all the way to the crown of your head, down through the spine, into the coccyx and the tailbone, and you're feeling yourself and your king and queen in your own shit pile.
Wow. So, do you have an executive package? Now we have the Bonini packages showing up. No, honestly, because I think
I don't have an executive package. I have services for every person on earth, because what makes executive is not the position that you hold. It's what is between those two ears.
Yeah, true.
So everybody needs to feel themselves. Everybody needs to feel important for themselves.
Yeah.
The position should not make you feel wonderful and cheesy. You should feel that about yourself. Love who you are completely. Feel it and know when you're out of tune, when you're in tune, when you've been triggered, when you haven't been triggered, when you're feeling good, when you're not feeling good, so that you can sort yourself out.
Yeah. So breathing and confidence. The connection.
Absolutely. Well, that's where we started. Absolutely. Because immediately when you go into breathing, as I said, confidence is very much exterior. Breathing forces you to understand the geometry of the body, right? Because if you're not breathing functionally, you feel tightness, you feel, oh, I'm not liking this. I don't know what I'm doing. But if you're using the breathing apparatus properly, right, you will feel, oh, I feel myself. I'm feeling myself. Oh, I love this. Oh, this is good. Oh, wow.
There is flow,
there's congruence, there's, you know, there's energy that's moving and going into places that I've never even discovered.
Yeah. So I know this mantras, you know, people saying, yeah, you should say this in the mirror and all that. I actually think this is included in the mirror routine, you know?
Affirmations, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, so affirmations. And I'm just saying now, breathing, it should actually be added into that, not just, you know, screaming out loud.
Absolutely. So I have packages that do include that. So when I'm working with emotional relief, we also do breathing and tapping. So I have various packages that are in place. I mean, I have a package that is just about breathing, where I breathe people for a minimum of 7 days. I prefer it that way, because that's when you'll be able to feel the shift happening in the body on a deeper layers of your body. This is when you become a true alchemist, the change agent in your own body. So why do I say 7 days, not 1 day or 2 days or 3 days? Because energy is cumulative.
I like that. Wow.
So a lot of us, when we do this self-development work or transformational work, because the results of it are intangible, it's not something that I can present to you and say, oh, I did this today, look what I got, right? Mm-hmm. A Tinkerbell.
Mm-hmm.
We feel good in that moment. It makes us feel good and we leave it there, because the problem we think is gone and we're done. Then we leave it there. The reason why we do that is because we have been conditioned into thinking that our healing and our well-being is external. Somebody else's responsibility, not mine.
Yeah.
So you do it once, you take your tablets, your antibiotics for 7 days, and then you think the problem is gone because it has numbed the symptoms or muted them. You then say, I am cured and I'm healed and I'm done. The body doesn't work that way. As I said, energy is cumulative, and every organ in your body has energy, right? energy that governs it, which is called the chi, which is the life force. So if I'm working on you and it's day one, I will definitely make you feel good in that one day. Without a doubt, I'll do that job. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow when shit hits the fan, that pathway will be non-existent.
Because it's not been developed and
entrained. Because it has not been developed and trained. Thank you, my friend. So it's like you getting a cutting from my nice rose bush, and because you see it, it's flourishing, it's being fed, it's doing amazing things. You're like, oh, I'm going to start growing roses. You take this cutting, and then I tell you, go put it in water. You put it in water and soil and everything, and you leave it there. And then you're going to ask me, how come my rose is not growing?
Okay.
So we take people then through those 7 days, because then that's when now that neural pathway would have been created. You are going to start feeling that I feel good by day four. Day one, two, three is challenging because it's a new thing. You are unconsciously incapable.
Oh, yes.
At that point. Then as we continue, still within day one and day three, you are now consciously still incapable, right? Mm-hmm. Then we get to the point where now you're conscious and capable, which is day four, five, six, and seven.
Yeah.
So you are now starting to take responsibility, either going on a course and developing it further, or having a particular ritual in the morning or evening or during the course of the day where you invest into that neural pathway so that it fires up, the groove becomes so dominant that it becomes the what? The root of least resistance.
Wow.
So I tend not to do once-off sessions for that reason. I can do a once-off session for skepticals, and you're not a skeptical because you're trying to prove whether I work or not. You're proving for yourself whether you like it or not. Whether you like it, you still need to pay me. Because I think a lot of people, when they see us people who work in the wellness space, they think, "What? How does this thing work? Take me through it, and it has to be for free. Does it? Do you do that with a heart surgeon? You don't know what heart surgeon does. I'm curious to see what you do. Okay, or a guy in the heart. I'm pregnant. I've got about to be a baby. Can you show me how you're going to take this baby out? Show me. Demonstrate. Prove to me that you can do it. No, you shit killed, like that don't exist.
You killed me with a heart one. Like, can we try?
You know? You know, people do that, and we have allowed them as well. So I do give free sessions when I'm available to do that. When my cup is overflowing and I'm able to give you stuff from the saucer, I will give you. But when my saucer is empty, it means I am not giving you anything for free, because I need my cup to be modified, to be multiplied as well. So give me something so that I can give you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So there are all those packages there that I then do. Then I have packages where I do coaching and breathing and emotional release, and we do personality attributes and all of that. So I also have stuff for trauma. I have stuff for anxiety. I have stuff for phobias. I have stuff for being receptive to criticism. I have stuff for understanding how to process things from a higher consciousness, or what I call how to think and behave like an ego.
Oh, yes. I like that. I actually like that. So as we kind of like wrap up, you mentioned you're a giver, and all of what you say, you're saying, and your business is obviously built around that. Is it difficult being a giver, you know, in a world that seems to want to take and take and take? How do you manage? How do you self-regulate?
Okay. I guess maybe let me then correct you in saying, when I was saying as giver, is not the only thing about me. Where, like some people say, I'm a warrior, and that's all they see in how they process life. But I give a meaning. I love, I get my energy from people.
Mm-hmm.
I get my energy from people. So I love giving people what I have. I think that let's be clear. There are some people who would call themselves givers, but mm-hmm. they will give even when they don't have.
Oh, I see. So what do we call those ones?
I don't know. I don't even know if them being a giver is a fitting term. But I was just describing in terms of I give. You know, I give, I'm a giver. I give certain things. And I give them because at the time, I do have that in my vault. I do have that in my pantry. I will not give you my last packet of Semp. And then the next thing I'm going to be suffering and saying, ha, 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 we can share it maybe.
So, you know, there's a, you know, personality, there's a framework you talked about the last time we spoke that I thought I liked. Maybe you can just summarize it if you're able to share that is, because I thought it was very... Yeah, lemon, I thought that was interesting. Like, if you can just touch on it, you know, I think, because I was curious, like, oh, lemon, is like, oh, that's interesting, but yeah.
Yeah, so lemon is just an acronym, really, which L stands for luminary, E, entrepreneur, M, manager, O, organizer, and M, networker. The book was written by Brett Johnson, and the concept was also developed by Brett Johnson. Brett Johnson is a South African person, but he's currently living in California. And he started identifying people in the boardroom, and he was working for Ernst & Young at the time, I think. Maybe I stand to be corrected, but he was working for those auditing firms. And he will go into a meeting and he will have one executive who wants a whole stack of a report, like layers and layers and layers of sheets of paper. And one who says, just say, just give me an executive summary of where we are and where we're going,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there are those who would ask specific questions around, so what why are we in this game? Why are we in this game? What's the bottom line? And then there are those who would want to go through the processes and procedures. How did we get here? Right? They want the whole report A to Z and to go through it sheet by sheet. And then there are those who are really interested in who got involved when this was put together and, you know, what did they contribute? What perspective they bring in mind? Because, you know, so the L person is the one who would typically would have asked, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we still going through the same thing that has been going on for the last 2 years and not full looking forward?
Mm-hmm.
So they ask the why questions, which is the luminary. They govern and navigate themselves on the edges of the world. So they literally call things obsolete very quickly. And look at in terms of Apple as well. Let's take that, and so that you can understand fully the mindset that was behind it. Over and above the glorious aspect of Steve Jobs, the fact that Apple products become obsolete.
Mm.
Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
Yes. So I have, and I'm because I have products that are now obsolete. So I have an iPad, the first mm-hmm. series of iPads that came out, and I stopped using it for years. I think for 4 years now, I stopped using it. And then I remember, oh my God, I have this thing. My daughter needs a device. I need to. Then I go to the Apple store, and then they tell me, sorry, ma'am, we can't help you with this anymore because we no longer keep these in store. We don't even have the software for them because they're not obsolete.
Okay. I'm not an
so
Apple
you
person.
Need to
Thank
then
God.
Go and
Thank
do God. This yourself or literally sell it or do whatever, but we cannot help you. Even the wires for them, they are now obsolete.
Okay.
So they literally a luminary is that person who do not try and engage them on matters of today and yesterday's.
Okay.
If you are, project him into the future.
Okay.
Because then they will understand you because they are not here. Right? Then you have an entrepreneur. So an entrepreneur then will say, why not? right? So you are busy saying, you know, the reason, if we're saying then we're sitting in a boardroom and you have a luminary and saying by the year 2050, this is what is going to be happening. This will be obsolete. We'll no longer be using the system. It will be out of the way. The entrepreneur will be like, presto, why not? Where's the money? What's the bottom line? When does it start? In fact, the entrepreneur will even go as far as saying, guys, I've already started, right? They will. The aeroplane will be flying even before the seats are in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People will already be saying, let's put a test model already into the market. I don't see why this shouldn't be done, like yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? Then you have the manager, which is the M. The manager is the typical Bonini who will be like, hold it, stop. Fuck. Where are you? Where the fuck? Can you just tell me, how the hell is this airplane going to fly? How the hell are you saying that by 2015, this program will be out of the system?
Typical manager. Can you
tell me what will be the systems and procedures that we will need to get to put into the considerations? What are the rules? What is the protocol? You know, take me through the process because I don't have fucking idea what you just talked about. I see the bottom line. I see the numbers. I see the, but how? Give me the map.
Yeah.
Right? Then the luminary and the entrepreneur are rolling their eyes, are like, fuck me gently. What the hell?
Yeah.
Like really, Chiquita.
Yeah. Well,
can't you see it? This is the luminary. And the entrepreneur is like, I don't understand why this is not making sense to you because there's money in this.
With the bottom line.
Right? Then we have the organizer, which is the O. The organizer is dizzy as hell at this point because there is this one who is talking philosophical things, which is the luminary. Then there is the entrepreneur who's already running numbers and schemes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which stream will work, which stream will not work. Then there is the manager who's already starting to put the guidelines together and understanding point by point where these two little fools are going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the organizer, and this organizer, by the way, in bread terms, is not an organizer, as in the, somebody whose thought process is organized, they understand, they're clean, their desk is orderly. The organizer is waiting for instructions. When and where?
Yeah.
They're here. They're like, so today what needs to be done?
Oh, I see.
Today, like now.
Mm-hmm.
Where should I go? What should I do? You know? Intuitively, they will be guided and say, okay, I think this is what needs to be, but they will be thinking in terms of today, like now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So, and you need to talk to them in verbal, what do you call them? Action words, right?
Okay.
So you need to literally be very clear that this is what I want you to do, right? And often these are the people who don't end up being in leadership positions, executive leadership, because they always need direction.
Yes, okay, that makes sense.
Yes. So you'll find them more also in NGO structures, because then they will need to then have a team that where they'll say, so what should we do now, Maggie? And you, Quinton, what is going to be happening with the books? They will not be the ones who are steering the sheep. They will be there, but if they're just sitting there and just be, everybody's happy and everybody's good and the system is moving, they're good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're moving forward. Then there is the networker. Luminary, busy already in 2050. Entrepreneur running schemes, they've already found the scheme that's going to work. In fact, they've already started doing the scheme. Now the manager is already now on point 10. He's put the guidelines in terms of what needs to be done. Oh, and now she's busy taking them to the organizer and making sense and saying, today, this is what you need to do. Or they're already taking tasks. The organizer is already putting tasks in terms of the action that they need to. The networker then says, and I know a person.
I know a person. Yes.
The person I know who would be a great at this is the who, and who is who of who, right? So they have a black book. So they are the ones who say who is involved. So who's involved in the scheme? That's the sort of question that they would want. So who would be in our partners in this game, you know? And so on and so forth. Or they'll bring the team together of people who would would be ideal for this project. So we all have different slices of the of lemon, as Brett says. So a part of you is luminary, a part of you is entrepreneur, a part of you is manager, a part of you is organizer, and a part of you is networker. Obviously, it is the ratio of those slices. You will have a primary and a secondary, meaning the primary is your default pattern. Mm-hmm. So I'm a manager organizer. So my default pattern is manager. I need to have a system. Think back to what I asked you when you talked about the podcast. What is the question that I asked you? How does it work?
How does it work? You know, you're almost like interested in how, you know, you should prepare. Yeah. And
So I process things from that angle. So you start listening to the sort of questions that people ask. It's either a why, why not, meaning going against or going for the idea. It's either they will fuel fire into the idea and give it more of a boom and say, literally, now you need to go forward with it. Or they'll ask you about the processes and procedure. Or they'll ask you what needs to be done, what, when, where. And or they'll say who, right? So all those questions. So now, my primary slice being a manager, for me to understand anything, firstly, it has to be in a process. You win me over immediately. But then life is not like that, right, Tim?
Yeah.
You have a typical luminary. Before I did lemon, I used to have difficulty because then I would expect people to talk to me in my language.
Yeah, which we know doesn't really happen. It's like with the analogy. Give me
the process. Where are you going with this? So I will then notice that, oh my God, who is this retard, right? I don't even understand what you're saying. I then realize that, by the way, it is my responsibility to take what this person has just said and put it into the how in my head. Once I have done that, then in order for me to continue with further interaction with that person, I need to be in that conversation and listen to how they talk and give them the information back in their language. So that's how then you get to evolve and grow and have what you call emotional intelligence. It is not taking anything away from you. If anything, it's allowing you to be more dynamic and expansive. It is still your responsibility to process things from the way you understand your map, because your map is not the territory.
No, true. And I think that's actually so profound. I actually wonder, what would you reckon mine would be? Obviously, I know there's a whole assessment process and everything, but just from your own, the conversations I've had with you, whether in the past or now, I'm just curious. I don't know. Lemon, which slices of lemon do you think I have?
I don't know, Tim. It's a bit hard to say. Definitely not an entrepreneur. If you are an entrepreneur, you're more skewed on the social impact of things, because then you're an entrepreneur, you have enterprising, which is money orientated or social impact. So entrepreneur is why not, you know, literally as long as they feel that impact, they'll go with that. You could be entrepreneur in that sense.
The social impact, yes, that I agree.
Manager, I don't know. No, I don't think so. I don't think you're into processes and procedure.
No,
I see maybe an EN, meaning entrepreneur networker. You're a people's person. You like who's this, who's that, you know, whatever. You're literally getting into the hearts and, you know, the cavities of a person. So for you, an organization is people, not people. The people are not the organization.
There's a big connector element, which is, because for me it's about multiplying value. That's actually what my whole enterprise is about, even this that we are doing, which is to say, I know someone and this is what they do and this is the value they bring.
You see, let's go network.
Let's multiply the value and let's move forward. That's it. Your processes, your things, I don't even care about them, like you know, theory of humans. That's what I have.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually like it. So is this part of your offering? I mean, maybe let's just kind of tie up together to say Bonini Inc. from an enterprise perspective, you know, I know you have quite all these things that you've talked about. I mean, you do coaching, you do the breathing, which I mean, you've earned yourself the tag of breathologist. And then do you do personality assessments as well? Of course, we link all
the
available.
Some people get stuck.
People will be listening. Yeah.
Yeah. So you see, with where I am now, I'm no longer offer Lemon as an independent service. I used to before. I used to run Lemon workshop independent. However, I noticed that we're deeper than that, because then people were just fixated in understanding Lemon and not understanding that there is, you know, we're very complex and there's layers and layers and layers of us. So when I do the deep coaching for people who get the deep coaching service, Lemon leadership would be one of the variables that you can include and infuse in that.
Yeah.
So let me give you an example of when I do Lemon leadership on its own. So within Lemon leadership, as we have just talked, you have your primary slides. That primary slides or secondary slides is influenced by those things we spoke about earlier, your culture, right? Your belief system, your socializing, your education, your self sense of identity, da 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 da. Right?
Yeah.
So your Lemon slice sometimes, yes, it can appear as if it is entrepreneur because of the type of work you do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually luminary.
Okay. So could that be like camouflage or something? I don't know. Like you're in the...
Again, it's conditioning because you went in to be a chartered accountant and this is your striving for money. Everything was about money. Meanwhile, let's say you're a networker versus an entrepreneur, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, all you really want to do is really get into people's issues, understand people, move people, connect people. That's where you gel and you feel really happy. And you're able to do that probably when you're at home versus at work. So sometimes there's that conflict. And we get to that point in our life processes sometimes where you feel that stuckness. So if you're just doing Lemon on your own, I can leave you there after I've told you what your Lemon slice is. And then I give you things to think about in terms of what you need to process. But you need to take it further and add another layer and now work on those nuances. How do the two get to coexist? How do I get to allow myself to have an entrepreneurial mindset because I've been trained to think like that and it's not me? Meanwhile, I'm a networker. How do I get the two to be together and being congruent? So that's where now we get to understanding on the meaning you attach to things. It's possible to still bring a sense of your network slides into your work.
Yeah.
And do an excellent job of it without feeling that it's draining you, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all of those things of now unconditioning, unlearning, unwiring, and really untangling yourself from thinking a certain way to really now being open-minded and saying, I see now. So the training of being an entrepreneur is still there. It doesn't take away anything from me. But my conduct can still be from a networker point of view.
Yeah, true.
So it's that. So that's why now I put it as part of a package. But a person, if they just want to know, if they really will just want to know what is my left Lemon slice, let's go through. Because then I do a strategic unpacking of it, where I unpack it, where you understand the nuances of your primary slice and the nuances of your secondary slice. So it's quite comprehensive in that way because you are mindful now. You have now a dual perspective of who you are so that you can understand my vulnerable points, my pain points, my triggers and all of that. So I do that as well.
Yeah. Great. Wow. So I know. I mean, we obviously will link this up in the show notes and everything. So, are there any thoughts that you may want to share just around Maybe just almost where we began, you know, to say, you know, lessons that you would say you'd want to leave, you know, people with, that you'd say, you know, have really influenced you or helped you to get to where you are. You know, maybe just any closing thoughts or reflections or perspectives.
You know, I think what stands out immediately is the analogy of an ego.
Mm-hmm.
I think for us to mourn, it feels like a powerful word to use, and it makes me sound smart. To mourn the period that we've just gone through as citizens of the world,
mm-hmm.
is to adopt the ways of an ego. There is a period that an eagle goes through in its life where it has to die whilst it's still alive.
Yeah, yeah.
And it takes a period of a couple of days where in this period it has to inflict pain in itself, pull out the old stiff feathers and also the cuticles of its claws and pull them out so that the new ones can grow. There is growth in pain. And we are so fixated on things getting back to a certain level that you don't even know what it's going to bring. Then you disregard the work that you need to do in preparation for that level.
Yeah.
We still want to have the same cloak, the same layers of feathers, and, you know, the same length of cuticles or nail polish and everything. I still want to look smart and keep pretty and all of that. I'm just waiting for level one.
Oh, level one. Level zero.
We actually need to be moving beyond level one and going higher. Because that's what an eagle does. When there is a shit storm, when there's a storm looming, it flies high above the sky, above the clouds. It goes to the highest and then it gets to spread its wings and not feel the storm. So when you take off the layers of what defines you, what you should be doing, what you could be doing, what you could have done, leave them and be here so that you can allow yourself to be as light as possible.
Yeah.
We need to be navigating this wave with fluidity, not with heaviness, and allow ourselves to take off those feathers that have no longer served us, which is all these material things that we have accumulated and got us into debt. Debt that is now giving us a headache. People are now calling us left, right, and center, wanting their money because we've used it to buy stuff. So we need to get rid of all of those things that used to define us and we thought they're part of our existence.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because when you come out of that period, you then need to make room for newness.
Yeah.
And that's why an eagle goes into hibernation during that point, takes off what needs to take off, relaxes, be mindful, be in the process, go through the pain, let go of triggers, and then flies out and it's a new eagle.
I like that picture.
And it lives for another 30, 40 years again after that. But we're not going to do that because guess what? We are layered with issues. We are heavy.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Wow. Feels like we should play a song and dance.
Absolutely. Why not?
I don't know which song would be perfect. Any quirkiness around you? What do you enjoy? Wind down, you know, like when you're not doing all these amazing things. Like, what do you do for fun other than drinking lemons?
I make funny faces. I talk funny. I watch ridiculous shows, like really ridiculous, which I call them rubbish in my household. And my kids know that because it's just nonsensical rubbish of people living a pathetic life that looks you know, flavorsome and flavorous, which is the Real Housewives series. I look at them and I see patheticness all over the place. I love entertaining and just being free. I just love having people over. Mm-hmm. I love saying jokes. I love making fun of myself.
You like swearing a lot?
I love swearing because sometimes it makes me feel connected to my spirit. It's the most
beautiful thing. Is that therapy, by the way? I think it was Marie Folio or somebody. I think it was some guy. And it, like, and he has some swear notes. And so like, yeah, you know, like, say, fuck you. And it's like, scream this. And then there was this like, fuck you for being too perfect or something. Like, yeah. It's like, wow. And apparently that's therapy. It's like, okay, interesting. I don't know.
It is. It's therapeutic because there's no judgment. There's no holding back where you're like, oh my God, oh, it's blasphemous. Oh my God, I'm not going to go to heaven. Oh my, it's just a fucking word. It is just a word. It is not personal. It's just a word.
That's a good word. You're not going to heaven.
I have to take my kids through that induction because sometimes I'm like, fuck me gently. What the hell? Right? Look at the... like, no, you're swearing at us. I said, no, I'm not swearing at you. I'm expressing language that it might not be acceptable to some people in describing the situation.
Yeah. So St. Peter's is not keeping a record. It's like, hey, you swore 10,000 times. So sorry.
You know?
You can't enter. Oh, goodness. It's so much fun. You're so much fun. Like, cooking, I don't know, any house making, you know, things that you do within the house that are therapeutic or fun or enjoyable beyond
therapy for me is order. I love order. Okay. Okay. Not like, oh, let me count to three and then place this thing. But things have to be in a particular way at a certain time. So, like, sometimes there is untidiness that's neat, you know? I like those things. Like, for example, on weekends, our bed is not made. I don't really give a fuck. Because then they've ordered, they've closed in the laundry basket, they'll be ordered, but it's okay, it just looks ruffled up, and you know, I like those sort of things. So the kitchen can be, the dishes will be in the sink Saturday and Sunday, as long as they're in the sink, not all over the counter, that sort of thing. So I'm that sort of person that even in untidiness, I like order.
So are you a perfectionist or not really?
No, listen.
You have soul and swag and sass and class.
The sink can be full of dishes from Saturday to Sunday, right? But they are in order.
Okay.
That's up in there. A perfectionist will not want to see anything
in the sink.
The bed must be made with pristine every single time, rubbed with the... with a whatever, and stand back and look and check. Yeah, all the lines are symmetrical. No, there are days when I don't really give a shit. But there are days when there are certain things that need to be done because I want them done a certain way. I'm not all that much of a stickler. Cooking for me has been a journey that I have enjoyed that has allowed me to embrace the fullness of my womanhood. I'm not saying it's a woman task, but for me, that's what it speaks to. Because cooking, oh my God, cooking. You know what I visualize when I cook? When I put things together, a menu, and I'm cooking a meal? It's a memory for my kids.
Oh, wow.
Why are you going to make me cry? Because I always say, I always want my kids one day when they go to varsity, they say to their newly found friends, you must come to our house for the holidays. You will love my mom's cooking.
Oh, nice. And lots of love.
The day when they do come, the day they do come, as they walk in, they'll just be welcomed by this beautiful aromatic smell of food. Because smell is one of the strongest senses that lingers in your in your medulla oblongata or hippocampus, your memory bank.
Yeah.
So the first thing that my kids always ask me when I pick them up from school is, what's for dinner? And guess what? That gives me so much joy, Tim. Wow. Oh, my God.
That's such a That's, no, honestly, that's actually, wow. Orgasmic, isn't it?
It is. It can be the simplest of the meals. But because they know that I dedicate time to making meals, I often do not take appointments in the afternoon because that's when I need to prepare dinner.
Wow.
Because I like that affordability.
Tell me about that regimen. In terms of your regimen, you know, what is cooking then? Is it something that takes you 3 hours, you know, 4 hours? You know, I realize I asked this for a reason. I mean, I remember we were invited to some friend's house. They're from West Africa. And it's like, yeah, you know, this rice, this took 5 hours. And then, you know, this other one. And it's not just rice. It's like a meal, you know. This one took this one took 6. And then this one took 4. And I remember, I mean, growing up, I mean, I think from where our part of the world, cooking was like a chore. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You're coming. Okay, fine. In 30 minutes, the thing is ready. So it's not really this thing that there was such devotion. And I know, and I talk about the food culture in the Kenyan coast, which I say we borrow from, where we have chapatis and all this, where, you know, there are people who spend time cooking. So for you, what's cooking? What is cooking? Like, is that something that you
spend time? I don't like hard labor food. You know, don't give me stuff that I need to grind the sheep's head for hours. And if I got somebody to do that, they can do that. Then I know what to do with it. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So I like soul food. At the same time, I also like your Mediterranean-inspired food. I'm not into your three-course meal sort of nonsense. I love food that has that melts and makes you feel whole and nourished inside. Like, oh my God, Jesus, like literally, you know, and it just completes you and puts a smile on your face. Because I also love actually scouting for quality food or ingredients where I like exploring and looking for that. So like I can make an easy meal, but if my heart is in it can be the most amazing thing.
So it's food with heart.
I cook with my heart. I really cook with my heart and in my eyes. So before I go into something, I've got to visualize it. I've got to see it.
Is that something you'd want to take to the gallery, or is that just something you'll keep at home?
Pardon?
I'm saying, is that something that you want to take to the gallery, or is just something that you want to keep at home? Because, I mean, like, you're serving the world in the ways that we've discussed, but food seems to be a very deep passion, which I know you're using
it to legacy.
I don't know whether you'd want to bring this publicly.
Story, my friend, I don't know where the food story is going to go. I've told you my connection with
food. That's your brand.
No. Food has such a significant place in my heart because I think it was instilled that way at home by my mother. My mother has special names for certain types of food. The crappiest food, but she gave it a sexy name and we used to get excited about it.
So, but would you, why not take it and make a business out of it or put it out there and serve people and serve the world?
Now that you've put it out there for me, the universe, through my heart, it will guide me, my friend.
Yeah, because there's such a deep heartfelt passion that I could just feel through that by you just the expressions and how you just talked about it. That's why I'm saying, you know, food with heart, you know, with Bonini, you know,
it's as part of the empire.
As part of the empire. No, breathologist.
People look forward coming to my house because of that. You know, I can make you a slice of toast, but the way I'll present it, it'll make you feel homely and it actually tastes fucking good and yet it's albany red. You know, that sort of thing. And I'm just that sort of person. I love food because it gives you a sense of being welcome. Even the presentation of it has to speak that. So... Yeah. I love it. It's a basic need, after all.
Yeah, it is. It is, and you're very passionate about it. So, creatively, what would you say is your creative expression? I mean, that's
probably. Aren't we done, my friend?
No. We are not done. This is the last one. Your authentic self-expression. You know, I don't know if you saw that on Timitude, because. And I know we met on a writing note, but it sounds to me that your expression might be something different. And I think you alluded to that in one of our conversations. So take it away and drop it up. And maybe go and cook for us after.
I would. I think one of the podcasts, actually, we should do it around a meal. You see, once the sun is out, you can come over and we have a chat. And yeah, we take it from there.
That would be fun. So what would you say is your self-expression? Like,
no, it's not one. It's not one thing, my friend. I'm too complex for that. I've moved away from this one sentence, one word sort of narrative. No, I'm very deep, Shim. No, Tim. Just don't make me that shallow, my friend.
Okay, tell me a joke. Tell me a joke.
Tell you a joke. I had one the other day.
Oh, God. Actually, have you ever contemplated doing stand-up comedy?
Because I you see, now, when are you giving me all the roles? No, I had one the other day where I was just trying to soften a client who was not smiling, and I got her to smile. Yeah. Oh, but I forgot what it is, because it's not my curry. It's not my thing. See, I was making it up.
Yeah, like, what do you use when you're in, I'm sure you found yourself in an awkward moment. What would that, is it your sense of humor? Like, what has been your point of salvation to just, like, get out of a sticky situation?
Awkward manner. I create awkwardness.
So you escalate it.
I create awkwardness, my friend.
You take it to the next level.
Describe awkward. Because awkward could be, I could tell you a story of when I first went overseas and went to England, and we're in a tube, a friend of mine, my girlfriend, on our first trip overseas. And they were two black girls from Lesotho, excited to be in a tube, first of all. We're looking at the, you know, the map and check, oh, this is the route that the train is taking. And we're noticing how stiff and, you know, these people and angry they look, and we're busy speaking in our vernac, and then we're literally talking about this woman, and we're looking at her, but we're speaking our language, and then until she responded to us in our language.
Oh, God. Oh, no, that's bad. No.
So there is awkwardness.
Oh, God.
That sort of awkwardness.
What did you do then? No, this is bad. This is so bad. God, this is so bad.
We are looking at each other across, as you know what the tube looks like. Literally, there is no way to hide. There's no way to run.
I hope you are saying the Lord's Prayer or something nice. Were you saying Hail Mary or something?
I literally closed my eyes. And you know when you open half of the eyes with the index finger and the middle finger, and you're just like, sorry. Oh my God. And you move on. And this was not the first time this has happened, by the way, because even in Cape Town, it happened to some colored woman who I thought was colored, and it's somebody's mom. And we were talking about her, like, oh, Moshe, I said, no, I'm a mirror. And then she responded to us, oh my God. Oh. But I never learned. I didn't learn. So awkwardness comes, oh, I can tell you the other awkwardness, but I don't know how I get out of them. When in one of the jobs where I got interviewed, and I did manage to get the job, by the way,
where the
lady had quite a big belly. Her belly had quite a huge presence, almost the shape as if she was pregnant. And she was going to be my boss, and she was interviewing. So as we were exiting, I asked her, so when are you due? She looked at me, and she's like, hey, I'm not pregnant. I'm like, oops.
Oh, God. Oh. Oh, okay, I've not laughed this hard in a long time. You should do standard comedy or something. I don't know. Whatever.
Oopsie daisy.
So how did you get out of that and still get the job?
But this is the thing, Tim. That's why I'm saying, how do I get out when I create the shit myself? I really don't know.
Oh, God, no. Okay, look. Here's the thing. I'm coming to your house for a cookout. Mostly to eat, and then we can do a chit chat episode. And then secondly, these things that you made me laugh so hard, I can't even now focus. Oh, God. And officially, you've broken all the records. This is the longest podcast recording ever on Jimmy Tune. Like,
really?
I've never done 2 hours, like, flat out.
Yeah.
Oh, my friend. Thank you.
Thank and on you. That note, good
yeah,
night.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you for the opportunity as well. It's been great. And I loved every minute of it.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, my friend. Hey? I think you're catching my rhythm. It's either we're celebrating Christmas already or New Year. I'm done with people feeling sorry for themselves and thinking, stop it.
No, I jumped on the Jewish bandwagon. It remembers their New Year now. It's like, yep, I don't care. It's New Year in Ethiopia. It's like, yeah, we are new. The year 2013 in Ethiopia. We are starting in September. It's fine. We're okay. Bye. Like, we good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
no.
My honey. It's been great. Yeah,
thank you.
Have a wonderful day. And thank you for the opportunity and looking forward to many more of these nonsensical, dynamic, all of
jamborees
conversations.
Yeah. Thank you.
I would like to ask two favors of you as a listener of the Timitude podcast. One is to share this with someone who you know would benefit from, as we seek to bring out the best inspirational content featuring thinkers, dreamers, makers, movers, and trailblazers. The second request is for you to kindly leave us a rating in whichever platform you're listening to. We are available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and also recently on YouTube. Also, don't forget to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our channel on YouTube. We can connect on @Timitude on Twitter and Timitude on YouTube and on timitude.com. Once again, thank you for being part of the Timitude community.